to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanz in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, April 19, 2022. A top UN diplomat is visiting Sudan to discuss the situation in the contested Abyei area.
This outstanding unresolved issue of Abyei is a matter that I think requires the cooperation of both countries.
And a comedian in South Sudan says he wants to use comedy to put smiles on the faces of people in the country who are yearning for peace.
South Sudan is in a process where we are trying to trust again, to love again, to amend broken relationships again. Such activities are very important to prove to people, or even prove to ourselves that, hey, we can come together again.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN Secretary General's special envoy to the Horn of Africa is in Khartoum to meet with Sudan's military leaders and discuss the political situation in the country. Ambassador Hanna Serwa expressed concern over the recent violence in Abyei and called for cooperation among Sudanese and South Sudanese leaders to end the fighting in the disputed area. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
He's speaking to the media shortly after meeting Monday with the head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan. Ambassador Teta said the United Nations remains concerned over the political situation in Sudan and particularly in the disputed region of Abyei. Teta says she is in Sudan to consult with leaders of Sudan and South Sudan ahead of her briefing to the UN Security Council on last week's violence in the Abyei Special Administrative Area that left 41 people dead. She says there is a need to find an amicable solution to the dispute over the final status of the area so that citizens can enjoy peace and stability.
This outstanding unresolved issue of Abyei is a matter that I think requires the cooperation of both countries in an effort to be able to move beyond the tensions that currently exist and to find a solution that is acceptable to all the parties involved.
On Wednesday, armed Misiria Arab nomads from neighboring Sudan invaded the area, according to Abyei administrative officials. General al-Burhan ordered a 7-member panel of top military, police and public prosecution officers to investigate the attack. Teta says part of her role is to engage all concerned parties to figure out an amicable solution to resolve the conflict in the region.
In my role as special envoy, I am going to be able to work with the key parties, the two countries, and of course the groups within the region to see how we can move this process forward.
The UN Special Envoy, who will be visiting Juba in the coming days, is calling on the Sudanese and South Sudanese leaders to engage in discussions and resolve the final status of the area. She describes her meeting with the Sudanese officials as fruitful.
I very much appreciate the frankness and forthrightness with which government officials have exchanged views with me, and I intend to have the same conversation also over the next 2 days with government officials in South Sudan.
Since the secession of Southern Sudan from Sudan in 2011, both South Sudan and Sudan have claimed the border area of Abyei. The region is mostly inhabited by members of the South Sudanese Dinka Ngok, but it is also the seasonal home of the Sudanese Misiria Arab nomadic tribe. The UN Security Council established UNISFA in 2011, saying it was deeply concerned by violence, escalating tensions, and population displacement in the area. UNISFA monitors the border area and facilitates the delivery of humanitarian aid. The operation is also authorized to use force in protecting civilians and humanitarian workers in Abyei. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The South Sudan People's Defense Force and the SPLA-IO loyal to Riek Machar are trading accusations following renewed clashes between the two over the weekend. The spokesperson for the SPLA-IO says South Sudan People's Defense Force launched an attack on their base in Langiji over the weekend. The spokesperson for the South Sudan People's Defense Force says IO forces initiated the attack and his side only returned fire in self-defense. Manyang David Mayer reports for VOA from Juba.
SPLA-IO spokesperson Colonel Lampol Gabriel says soldiers from the South Sudan's People's Defense Force attacked his group's base in Langaji of Upper Nile State on Sunday.
Langaji has been subjected to several attacks from the SSPDS in the past weeks. And finally, Sunday, in the morning hours, they went and attacked the cantonment site. But the good thing, our intel was already very clear. We got information that they were coming to attack. So our forces withdrew from Langaji into the nearest bushes. They were able to burn down the place completely and follow these forces to the bushes where they retreated to.
Major General Lou Rai Kong, a spokesperson for the SSPDF, denies the government attacked opposition forces in Langaji, saying it is the other way around.
It was SPLA-IO forces that came and attacked our position at Bridge in Maban County of Upper Nile State. They were the ones that had initiated the attack. And our forces returned fire. Our forces did not sustain any casualties. And the information we got, it is not the first-hand information, is that the attack has had 1,000 killed and 2 were wounded.
A week ago, South Sudan President Salva Kiir appointed officers to the command structure of the various security forces following a deal reached by the SPLM in government, the SPLM-IO, and the South Sudan Opposition Alliance. Gabriel says, although the unified command was formed, security forces are not yet unified.
When the unified command takes effect, these acts of cowardice and acts of criminal will come to an end. Because you can't. The president himself, who is also the commander-in-chief of the SSPDF, made it very clear that these counterattacks should stop. These attacks and counterattacks should stop. No one should attack the other. The SLIO is already a force that is under the command, especially the unified command now is in place. They become part of the SSPDF. So there is no need for the forces on the ground to be attacked.
Over the Easter holiday, Archbishop Justin Badi Arama, the primate of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, appealed to Unified Command to observe the cessation of hostilities agreement. Kong claims that some forces loyal to President Kiir's deputy, Riek Machar, refused to adhere to the ceasefire deal.
The situation is very complex. We are having the necessary unified forces that have been at the training centers for the last 3 years. These are the forces that are having a national character. And these forces that have been at the training centers for the last 3 years without any problem. But we have a separate force that is directly loyal to Vice President Dr. Riek Machar. These are the forces in the countryside all over Upper Nile and Unity State that are causing problems.
Edmond Yakani, a civil society activist based in Juba, is calling on commanders on both sides to exercise control over their forces.
It's a continuous trend that we have seen among them, accusing each other from time to time in terms of violation of the peace agreement. Recently, both parties have signed an agreement on the implementation security arrangement. For me, I feel that this particular exercise in Upper Nile going on, it's a clear demonstration that the field commanders never adhere to the decision of their senior commanders, like commanders-in-chief. And also, this is a first test for the unified command structure.
Yakani says the government and opposition forces also launch attacks on each other as a way to gain access to food and other resources for their survival. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
One South Sudanese artist is using comedy to show another side of the country. He says news from South Sudan is dominated by violence, insecurity, their humanitarian situation. Comedian Akau Ajambo attracted about 800 people to the first ever international comedy festival in Juba last week. Sheila Pony has more for VOA from Juba.
The two-day festival, which included comedians from Uganda, Kenya, and South Africa, featured jokes about corruption, politics, economics, and sex. Jumbo says he was inspired by shows he saw in other African countries and learned that comedy can achieve far more than just making people laugh for one day about their problems.
This idea came up, I thought about when I first traveled to South Africa and I had interactions with other comedians and saw how amazing the scene in South Africa is and how they use comedy as a cultural exchange thing with where people come from all over the world and do comedy and also watch comedy. And I thought we should do this because South Sudan is like a bubble. People don't really know about South Sudan.
In a country like South Sudan where people have experienced so much sadness and misery due to war, Jumbo believes what people need is peace and a little laughter.
South Sudan is in a process where we are trying to trust again, to love again, to amend broken relationships again. Such activities are very important to prove to people or even prove to ourselves that, hey, we can come together again. Last week, it's just only 2 weeks since we had that serious tension, but 2 weeks later, we have a comedy festival and we are here together.
For the hundreds of spectators that turned up for the shows, the combination of social commentary, politics and humor proved irresistible. For Juba resident Awel March, the festival was a chance to laugh a little and temporarily escape her problems.
It was really great. I laughed out all my problems. I would love to come next year. And hopefully they get to do it like annually. And hopefully we get to see more of this next year.
Jumbo says artists see things with their third eye. He says if people can laugh about things that are really traumatic in society, it helps them get through life. As a result, says Jumbo, art is therapy. South African comedian KJ Magadi says comedy in South Sudan is what everyone needs right now.
Comedy is a great vehicle to discuss things in a non-confrontational way. You heard jokes about Dinga people without Dinga people being offended. And this is the role that comedy plays. Comedy stays in that space where we can discuss issues without offending each other. It's the light space where everybody understands and they're willing to open their minds a little bit.
The festival was funded by the Netherlands Embassy in South Sudan. The Netherlands ambassador to South Sudan, Jelly Van, says laughter can unite people for a common goal.
It's good to laugh about yourself, so I'm going to tell you one or two small jokes about the Netherlands. And I don't know if you can laugh about them, some of you probably can. But one thing about the Netherlands is that we are very much into football. You know that probably. Our national team is very famous. The only problem we have with the national team is whenever they're participating in a tournament, the Dutch population starts to celebrate their victory before they even play.
Jumbo says he and his team have big dreams for the South Sudan Comedy Festival.
Our goal is to put South Sudan and the comedy map. When people are talking about stand-up comedy in Africa, South Sudan should be there. When they want the projects that need comedians and all that, South Sudan should be there. How can we do that? We need to partner with other people, partner with other comedians, partner with other producers from all over Africa, producers that have worked with streaming companies as big as Netflix. We want to bring them here as well and work with us and see what we have here. And hopefully the comedians that are here will learn from them.
Some psychologists agree that comedy and laughter are the best treatment for stimulating the immune system and boosting human self-esteem. They say laughter decreases stress and reduces physical tension throughout the body, which can improve one's mood and reduce pain. For VOA News, I am Sheila Poni in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at climate change and what advocates are talking about. That story is next after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you forgive and forget?
It depends. Like, it depends on the situation or the fault that you did for me. Sometimes I forgive and forget. Other times I can't forget. I forgive, but I can't forget.
Yes, of course I forgive and I forget. First of all, if I forgive, my mind becomes clear to each and everything.
Of course I can forgive and forget. Reason being, there are very many people who harm us, but we shouldn't always keep it at heart.
Forgiving helps because sometimes we overlook some other things, because if, for instance, I do not forgive and forget, then what if the same applies to me?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America, and in our Tuesday Health segment, we take a look at floods in South Africa and what climate change advocates are saying. In South Africa, climate change advocates groups have filed criminal complaints against the government for failing to take practical action to address the climate crisis, which they allege amounts to unlawful negligence. The legal action follows floods in KwaZulu-Natal province that have cost around 450 deaths so far. President Cyril Ramaphosa says the disaster was part of climate change. A recent report by the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change warned of catastrophic effects, including in Southern Africa, should greenhouse gas emission not be cut drastically by 2025. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
International environmental agencies such as the Global Carbon Atlas say South Africa is the world's 12th biggest source of greenhouse gases. It still burns coal to generate electricity, emitting about 470 million metric tons of carbon dioxide into the air every year. Scientists, including those at the United States Congress-backed Global Change Research Program, say gases like CO2 trap the sun's heat in the Earth's atmosphere. They say this is causing global warming, which in turn is sparking radical weather.
We are living in this world of climate extremes, and we are going to have more floods, we're going to have more droughts, we're going to have more cyclones, we're going to have more wildfires. That means our societies have to be ready.
Vishwas Satgar of the Climate Change Charter Movement says South Africa's nowhere near ready for the future. He's one of the activists asking the police to charge President Ramaphosa and his ministers with criminal neglect. They claim the government's failed to keep promises made to limit carbon emissions when it signed the Paris Climate Accord in 2016. By continuing to pollute the air, says Satgar, the government has contributed to the recent spike in extreme weather, such as the floods in KwaZulu-Natal.
We didn't have to have this kind of loss if our state was serious about the climate crisis. What we have decided to do is test our criminal laws as the backbone of the rule of law in this country, as part of our constitutional order to affirm climate justice. This is going to be the first time that we are trying to do this in South Africa. We've been to two police stations. One charge sheet has been filled out in Mayville. Of course, the police didn't fully comprehend and understand what we were trying to do. But in the end, one of the station commanders got it.
Over the past 25 years, the government's made regular commitments to cut CO2 emissions. Yet its own environmental department reports emissions increased by more than 10% between 2000 and 2017. The South African Weather Service says individual weather events that happen over short periods cannot be directly attributed to climate change. Its records show, however, that severe weather events are increasing in Southern Africa. In recent months, three cyclones have hit Mozambique, with two tropical storms devastating Madagascar. There were also serious floods in KwaZulu-Natal in 2017 and 2019. Satgar says such tragedies will increase in the near future, unless South Africa phases out the use of fossil fuels.
Every gram, every ton, every megaton of carbon and greenhouse gases is going to make a difference between us surviving or us being extinct as a species.
The Ramaphosa administration says it will appoint scientists to study whether its carbon emissions are contributing to extreme weather. Satgar says that's pointless, as the research already has been done. He says what's needed is a policy to adapt to climate change and to reduce the use of carbon fuels. Legal experts say the criminal complaint against the government has little chance of succeeding. Satgar says it's already a success in that it pressures the state to adapt or die. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg, we move to Somalia, where a mortar shell landed on the grounds of the Somali parliament on Monday during a rare joint session by newly elected lower and upper chambers of parliament. Witnesses told a VOA Somali reporter in Mogadishu that seven people were injured, including two staffers and five guards. The parliament building is located near the presidential palace in the center of the capital. The Al-Shabaab terrorist group is claiming responsibility for the attack. Al-Shabaab routinely carries out mortar attacks on key installations and Mogadishu Airport. The UN mission in Somalia, UNISOM, issued a statement condemning the mortar attack. Ahmed Mohammed reports from Mogadishu.
Somalia's newly elected members of parliament were meeting Monday to approve procedures for the election of speakers when the grounds were hit by a mortar shell attack. In a Facebook post, lawmaker and presidential candidate Abdirahman Abdishakur Warsame said several rounds were fired and several people wounded, including two of his bodyguards. Somali militant group Al-Shabaab, in media posts, claimed the responsibility for the attack. Somalia's Office of Prime Minister Mohamed Hussein Roble condemned the assault, which it called a terrorist attack. In posts on social media, it said the attacks were cowardly attempt to intimidate parliament, which is in the process of finishing Somalia's indirect election. Roble commended the efforts of lawmakers to expedite elections. Before the attack Monday, lawmakers unanimously agreed to elect the Speaker of the Upper House on April 26th and the Speaker of the Lower House a day later. Somalia's indirect elections were delayed for several months because of political wrangling between the Prime Minister and President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, known as Farmajo. Farmajo had sought to extend his term in office, but backed off under intense domestic and international pressure. Al-Shabaab has taken advantage of the political instability to launch a series of deadly attacks on Somali security forces and politicians. Somalia's lawmakers are expected to vote for the next president as early as May. Ahmed Mohammed, for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
The Cameroon military has deployed hundreds of troops to its eastern border with Central African Republic after rebels from the Central African Republic this month abducted at least 35 people. The military says the rebels are targeting merchants, farmers, and rangers and stealing money and cattle. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's military says scores of troops on Monday raided villages and forests on its eastern border with the Central African Republic to free civilians held captive by CAR rebels. Speaking via a messaging application, Colonel Dominique Njoka says he led troops on the rescue mission in Bere, a border administrative unit where rebels were holding hostages.
When we arrived, unfortunately, they saw us, so they opened fire. But we reacted immediately, and in the confrontation, they ran away. Before running away, they killed one hostage, and one was seriously wounded. So he died. However, out of the seven, we liberated, five arrived safely. We keep on asking on the population to cooperate, to give us information at the appropriate time so that we can react.
Njoka says some of the rebels escaped across the porous border, while others are still hiding in forests in Cameroon. He says they deployed hundreds of troops to the area to flush out the rebels who have abducted at least 35 civilians in Cameroon in the past 3 weeks. CAR authorities say since March, fighting with rebels has increased. The UN peacekeeping mission to CAR MINUSCA last week said rebels pushed out of several towns were hiding on the border with Cameroon. MINUSCA said the CAR rebels were fighting to control border towns including Bamari and Alindao. Authorities say the rebels are crossing the border to escape fighting with CAR's military and to steal and abduct for ransom. 50-year-old Cameroonian cattle rancher Buba Alami says his son was among the freed hostages. He spoke on Cameroonian media Canal D TV and Equinox Radio. Alami says a strange visitor informed him that his 20-year-old son was in captivity in the forest on the border with the Central African Republic. He says the stranger told him the captors wanted at least a $5,000 ransom for his release, but did not tell him where and how the ransom should be paid. Alami says he spent two sleepless nights not knowing how to get in touch with either the abductors or his son. Cameroon's military says they were able to free the five hostages after villagers informed them where the rebels were hiding in the forest. Cameroon shares a more than 900-kilometer-long border with the Central African Republic. Cameroon this month sent its chief of defense to the border area to mobilize troops to stop the rebels from entering its territory. The Central African Republic descended into violence in 2013 when then-President François Bozize was ousted by the SELECA, a coalition from the Muslim minority that accused him of breaking peace deals. The CAR government in 2020 accused Bozize of supporting rebel attacks, which he denied. The ongoing fighting has forced close to 1 million Central Africans to flee neighboring countries, including Cameroon, Chad, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now end this show with Emmanuel Kembe and the song Kuliom Dushman. We've been listening to Emmanuel Kembe and the song Kuliom Dushman. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for spending your time with us this evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Love.